This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Once again, he can't help himself. He takes control of everything within his reach. So here we go again.
This was Chris. No, this one. I was thinking Back in Black, kind of like a Donald Trump thing, but we talked about it being hump day, and suddenly we're subjecting your hundreds of thousands of million listeners to Shock G and the Humpty Dance. I mean...
And we talk about the uncertainty of Donald Trump. How dare they?
Yeah,
the uncertainty of Wednesdays here on the Newell Norman shows can't be matched.
I need a personal care. I need a what are those called? Those bunny rabbits you carry around with you? I need one because of this show.
So DJ Camino Real. Wait. What is his name again? DJ
El Camino.
El Camino.
Front is like a car. Yeah. Back is like a truck. Yeah.
Absolutely, DJ El Camino. You know what today is?
Besides the day
shame
after the day,
it's National Nacho Day today. Come on,
I did not know it's National Nacho Day today.
You should know that. You should treat
Thank
your staff
you.
To nachos today.
Well, I'm going to. That's going to make me, you know, that's actually a really good idea because I need some. You know, the staff is kind of iffy on me here at Greater New Orleans, Inc., so I'm saying order nachos.
Absolutely. Super Bowl work continues. T-minus 95 days. I was teasing about you the other day as I was talking to Jay Cicero. I was going to call you and ask you to do the intro into my interview of him about how many days are left. He's like, please don't.
Yeah, he's not that big of a fan of the whole countdown thing. But I find it, look, I think it's just you have to put yourself under the stress because if you don't, you look up and you've lost a week. So you have to – we're in the mode now where we're trying to squeeze, you know, something out of every second, and it just has to be the mode. It's kind of like you're having, you know, the Christmas party and it's 1 hour before the guests arrive, and it's just – it's time. But what's really exciting now, Newell, is – you're starting to see this stuff manifest around the city. It's like, you know, it's like before the Christmas party, the food's in the oven. Now you're starting to smell it, and it smells good. Like, for example, I was going to our weekly meeting at City Hall today, and I'm going into City Hall. It smelled like a pool. It smelled like chlorine, and I love the smell of chlorine in the morning. What it is, or what it was, is that there are these drones outside City Hall right now power washing the building. And that might be normal in, like, normal world, but here, this is something that hasn't happened in, I don't know, in years. I mean, it's like art conservation. They're discovering, like graffiti from a decade ago that had been covered up. And it's, you know, and I don't think it's necessarily a Banksy or anything, but the building looks beautiful, and the sign's getting redone, and... it's, you know, I never thought I'd get thrilled by power washing, but I guess that's what it means to be middle-aged and kind of in government.
Careful, the Historic Preservation Society may step in. It may be historic. You never know.
This building.
I don't want to talk about it too much.
I know. I think City Hall, bless it. It would have been great in Miami about 50 years ago, but I don't know. I think charity should have become the new City Hall, but that idea never really happened.
But, Michael, when we talk about 95 days, it's getting close. Time's going by fast. I mean, you know, every day is another day behind, and it's interesting to see. I know that one of the observations that you made is that the city is issuing a construction moratorium, but that's not going to impact this work as they try and get themselves orderly, I guess, leading into the holiday season, Mardi Gras, as well as the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's all. You know, the press release that went out was frankly, it was overly broad in its language. And you know, we were fielding phone calls all morning. But basically, anything that is ongoing, whether it's IJRR work or Sewer and Water Board work or DPW work or lighting or dome or Super Bowl work, that all continues. Energy work continues. What they just want to make sure is that after Thanksgiving, nobody starts a new project that could end up train wrecking with an existing project or causing a problem for the game. So it's actually meant to be narrowly tailored, and as you said, to prevent kind of conflicts and mayhem. And so we just, I think another release went out that kind of cleaned it up a little bit.
Absolutely. I know that we are still looking at the impact of Taylor Swift. Any new numbers, anything that you're hearing about that?
Well, I talked to Doug Thornton yesterday, who, you know, is with ASM that runs the Dome, about their experience. And he said that it was just, you know, a triumph as a trial and as itself. I think probably the most significant thing relative to Taylor Swift, in my mind, was that the Dome was able to support 65,000 people, you know, live streaming or videoing for 3.5 hours. So, you know, there have been issues in the past with internet connectivity in the Dome, and apparently now, you know, we've got, you know, battleship-level internet. Also, the flow in and out of the Dome, they were very pleased with that, very pleased with the way the concessions worked. They liked the ride share. So I think the Dome came through Taylor Swift well. And actually, our Taylor Swift experience in New Orleans was so positive and so broadly appreciated that I actually was on Canadian Broadcasting a couple of days ago because they're about to get Taylor Swift in Toronto, and they wanted to know what they could learn from our experience. I mean, it's like being interviewed after surviving a hurricane. You know, right. What was it like? What can we how can we best prepare to be resilient in the face of Taylor Swift? But
get ready.
Yeah, you know, I don't know, like sparkle up and buckle down. I don't know, but it was Taylor Swift was excellent, and I think the numbers, if you actually do the numbers back of the envelope, Newell, between the ticket sales, between the estimate of everybody spending about $1,300 on hotel, food and beverage, and then a little lanyap, you get close to $500 million, close to $500 million of spend, which is you know, Super Bowl level big.
So, Michael, still waiting on some results to come in from last night's election. If it turns out the way that a lot of folks are predicting, Republicans gain control of the House, the Senate, and the executive branch of government, the presidency, we have the Speaker of the House and the majority, Representative Steve Scalise. Things got to bode well for this state. And Jeff Landry, who's very close to the president, to add to that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, regardless of who you voted for and what your political affiliations are, if you look at this objectively, this election was a good result for Louisiana. Like you said, it's fantastic for us to have a strong ally in the White House, and Governor Landry has a personal relationship with President Trump. You know, really, regardless of which way the House ends up going, we're still going to be well represented. Obviously, if it stays under Republican control, we've got Mike Johnson and Steve Scalise. But if it flips, then you're going to have Troy Carter, who's going to be very senior in the House, and he's positioned to be in a leadership position in that chamber. So we're good either way there. Somebody asked me this morning, they said, you know, what does this mean for the economy of Louisiana? And I said, well, from my experience from Trump 1, I think it actually is a very good thing, because the biggest bugaboo for the economy, and particularly for energy, and as well, and I want to note this for everybody, as well for energy transition and low-carbon energy projects like carbon capture, is that permitting and speed of government has been a real hindrance. And one thing was very clear the first time around, and I see no reason why it's not going to be even more so this time, is that the Trump administration is going to want to speed things up, get rid of bureaucracy, and move fast. And that will be good for all of our projects, but particularly big energy projects, including these carbon capture projects for which we now have primacy. So that's good news. And then the last one, which is more of a Louisiana specific, is Representative Joe Ogeron put up Constitutional Amendment 1. Really excited that that passed thanks to Louisiana voters. And this means that just like with oil and gas, now when we have revenues that come in from offshore wind production in Louisiana, that's going to come back to Louisiana and be dedicated to a coastal protection and restoration fund. And that's good news for, you know, for the future of our coast.
Yeah. Any other conclusions you draw from last evening?
You know, I think that, I think that when you start looking at the results and you start seeing who actually voted for Trump versus for Harris, there's a lot more unanimity across the crosstabs, across race, class, gender than I think people expected. And so to me, it says that whereas maybe we thought that in 2016 Donald Trump was kind of a historical fluke, maybe what we're seeing is a realignment in American politics. And if you kind of step back, we tend to go through these 30 or 40 year cycles of a political idea. It was the New Deal, coming out of the Depression, and that was kind of what everybody had to align to. And then there are also pressures around communism after World War, that time too, that kind of balanced the power between labor and management. Then we went into kind of a neoliberal period, which was more about globalization, more about free flow of trade. And that probably started to hit the skids around 2008 when we had the economic crisis. And so it might just be that we're seeing this, what feels like all this tumult and upheaval is actually a realignment within the parties and with American politics. And we're moving into some new constructs, some new paradigm. I'm not sure what it is, but it clearly is going to be more protectionist, more populist, and represent some type of reversion of focus on the working class of America, because ultimately it was those frustrations among the working class, I think, that drove this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Election result.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's almost as if we've come to the realization that there's a limit to what we can be, right? At some level, we want to be all things to all people, but that's not necessarily financially achievable. And in fact, I had this conversation with Joe Geruso earlier about whether the city is prepping itself to wean itself off of a lot of the grants. Almost half the budget comes from the federal government. And, you know, if you have the House, the Senate, and the presidency looking at the federal debt structure, albeit there were some things that Trump did in his first presidency because of COVID that increased that number, it seems as though that there's a reengineering of the outlook and what they're looking at relative to that, which is going to mean that there's going to be some cuts as to what the federal government's willing to finance. And we better get our budget right, you know, our organization right sized and priorities in place, or otherwise we will be behind that proverbial financial eight ball. Your thoughts?
I guess I have mixed thoughts on that, because on one hand, I do think that the de facto strategy of a lot of Louisiana, going back to Katrina, which has been to rely on disaster funding and grants, is obviously a flawed strategy long term, and we have to eat what we kill as entities. But I think when you look at what's going to happen in D.C., You know, the old kind of traditional, you know, Mitt Romney or Goldwater Republican model is kind of gone. The idea of being fiscally conservative, of really kind of watching the budget, trying to run a surplus. And if you look at both the Biden and the Trump administrations, you know, the money was just flowing. And in fact, if you look at what's happening with, I think with the bond market right after, two things happened in the market right after the election. So one is that the stock futures went up. And that's because I think people are anticipating, you know, tax cuts, and that's good for equities. But also the bond market went up. And my understanding is that that happens when the thought is that the government's going to start borrowing a lot more money. And so that's why the bond yields went up. And so I do totally agree that we have to really look seriously at our almost billion-dollar budget in New Orleans and think about right-sizing it, because now that I'm kind of quasi in government, it's clear there's enormous room for efficiencies. But I don't know that we're going to see a I don't know that we're going to see that much focus on the deficit and on spending coming out of any administration now, because it's just politically too attractive to spend money.
Well, it wasn't in the too distant past that we lost the Speaker of the House over that very issue, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, distant past where Ross Perot, you know, took 20% of the vote talking about it feels like, I don't know, it feels like ancient history. But this is going to be I think a very different Trump administration than the first time. If you kind of go back to 2016, Trump didn't expect he was going to win, right? He had no transition team. It was kind of a fluke. He was surrounded by very kind of traditional Republicans, like the Rex Tillerson types. Mm-hmm. This is a different man, a different level of experience, a different agenda this time. And, you know, my hope, and who the heck knows what's going to happen, is that some of the better aspects of what we've seen in Donald Trump, which is his, you know, not just willingness, but affinity for challenging conventional ideas, which need to be challenged, that's what we see more of, and less of things that are end up being, you know, self-destructive or hurtful. It's definitely a realignment, and I think I go back to kind of my earlier statement. This definitively shows that Donald Trump's greatest strength is reading the room like a great vaudevillian, like a great orator, almost like a great professional wrestler, and the room has changed, and that's why he's back again.
Well, you know, it's interesting when you go back and you look in history relative to the pandemic and some of the things that he said and some of the things that he desired, and he succumbed to his inner circle on some of those issues. His original position was, in fact, correct, and he was vindicated. You know, relative to opening up the economy, that we were going to decimate this country. The debt structure would change, things would change. You know, we wouldn't come back very easily because of those changes. It's exactly what happened, and no one wanted to listen to him at the time.
Yeah. So, and I think this time he's going to be listening, you know, probably to a much smaller and much more loyal, inner circle. So, look, we're definitely going to see tax cuts. We're definitely going to see tariffs go up, which, and I have very mixed feelings about, because I think that it is right that we have to respond to the competition from China, but. You know, tariffs end up basically being a tax on consumers. We're definitely going to see a crackdown on the border, and I don't think anybody has a problem really with that, because the way the border was mismanaged probably is the number one thing, or the number two thing behind declining real wages that undid the Biden-Harris ticket. And I think the question, you know, is if he does all of these things, is what's it going to do to inflation? And if he cuts taxes and raises tariffs, are we going to, get ourselves into an economic pickle that we're going to have to respond to? But
he's got an incredible opportunity to either redefine or refine his legacy, right? And not many people are given that opportunity. I mean, this goes back to Grover Cleveland, the last time that something like this happened. And it'd be interesting to see whether or not he's thinking along those lines. I was kind of shocked in the way that he actually shared the stage last night and had other people come up and speak. I think there are a lot of people on the stage that were actually thrown for a loop by that actually occurring, because you don't see that much. It was interesting.
No, that is interesting. And, we'll see what it is. But it all comes back to Carville and his advice to Clinton. It was the economy. And so it was really the economy and immigration, which is linked to the economy in people's minds and real wages, that pushed people over. And I think that fundamentally people felt frustrated and disrespected, and they voted to reflect that.
Yep. Absolutely. No doubt. All right. We're visiting with Michael Heck, president and CEO of GNO Inc. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.